Morning, ladies and gentlemen. We do have a quorum. I'd like to call this meeting of the House Transportation Finance Committee to order for Thursday, April 26th. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for both April 18 and April 25.
Thank you. Any discussion to those minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Thank you, Representative Johnson. The minutes are approved. Members and guests, we have just one issue before us today, and that is House File 4437, the constitutional amendment. We do have an amendment to get the bill in the order I would like, and I would ask staff to walk us through the amendment to House File 4437. I'll move that amendment. I move the DE2 amendment, but we'll hear about it before we vote. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the H4437 DE2 amendment contains the constitutional amendment proposal as well as some implementation language around that. So Article 1 contains the language of the Constitution as it would be proposed to be changed. So Section 1 contains the dedication of a portion of the state's general sales tax that would be attributed by law to motor vehicle repair and replacement parts and allocate that solely to roads and bridges. It would also establish a limitation on changing the revenue allocation so that it couldn't be more frequent than every 6 years. And then, Mr. Chair and members, Section 2 contains both the ballot question and the title that would go on the ballot. And then moving to page 2, Article 2 sets up the implementation language that would go along with the amendments if it were ratified by the voters at the 2018 general election. One thing I'll note right at the outset is that all of this implementation language not only has a conditional effective date, but also a delayed effective date. You'll see that at the end of the amendment. So this would all go into effect starting July 1, 2020. So it would kick in for fiscal year 2021. The first section lays out definitions for a new chapter of statutes that would contain some centralized sections around transportation finance. Section 2 would set up the revenue allocation of the newly constitutionally dedicated funds. And this split would be 4.5% going to an account for the Small Cities Assistance Program, the remainder going into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. As you may recall, that fund has a constitutional formula that goes along with it that then distributes any dollars going into it to both state and local road systems. So it's the county state aid, municipal state aid, and trunk highway systems. Both sections 2 and 3 then further address that portion of dollars that go into the trunk highway fund so that the trunk highway fund dollars would go into a new account being established, a construction account, and the uses of the funds in that account would be limited to construction, reconstruction, improvement projects on the trunk highway system. Section 4 provides for the monthly allocation of the revenues, so this would be directive to the Department of Revenue. Again, this has a delayed effective date, so this allocation method wouldn't actually go into effect right away. There's also a phase-in provision that would take place first. So that brings us actually to Section 5, which is the phase-in language. So this establishes a monthly deposit of revenues that would go towards that allocation of funds to the small cities and highway user tax distribution fund, and there's a phase-in schedule that's set up in this language so that starting in fiscal year 2021, 60% of the attributed revenue from motor vehicle replacement parts would be allocated, and that increases by 10 percentage points each fiscal year so that it hits 90% in fiscal year 2024 and then would be fully phased in fiscal year 2025. And that aligns with the constitutional language that establishes full phase-in by that fiscal year 2025 date. And then Section 6 contains a revisor's instruction that goes along with the centralization of some statutes into a new chapter of law around transportation finance, and then finally Section 7, the conditional and delayed effective date I touched on earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. I'd like you now to turn to the spreadsheet that's in your packets, and I'd like to ask Mr. Lee to step us through the spreadsheet. Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm looking at the one-page legal-size spreadsheet that is in Portrait, labeled House File 4437, DE2, Auto Parts, Constitutional Amendment, Revenue Estimates. The first few lines show the current statutory dedication as the result of Chapter 3, Session Law 2017 last year. So essentially that is what is in current law right now with the total at line 7. Currently, Auto Parts has a transfer amount to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund on line 2. The percent of Auto Parts that is going to Highway User Tax Distribution Fund under current law is on line 10. That's at 12% in the current biennium and about 54% in the tails. And I will note that revenue estimates and budget forecasts only go out for 4 years. So from fiscal 2022 on, these estimates are just using static numbers. Then on line 14 starts the DE2 amendment. So on line 5 would show the amount of auto parts that would be dedicated to transportation sources, with the actual impact to the general fund being highlighted on line 16, showing the five-year phase-in. So in fiscal 2021, the general fund impact would be about $21 million, and then that would ramp up as more of the auto parts was captured for transportation purposes only. Then on lines 20 and 21 show the statutory distribution between small cities and the HUTD, and again, these numbers are only above base spending.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions about the mechanics of the bill? Not looking for testimony for or against at this point, but just I want to make sure members understand how the bill works. Representative Vazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, as I look at the statutory implementation on page 6 of the bill, it seems to me then that the constitutional language locks this all in 2024-2025. The constitutional language does not lock in each individual phased-in step then, does it? Could a future legislature, say in 2022 or 2023, interrupt or, change this language during those 4, 5, or 6 years?
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. That is correct. The ramp-up is part of the statute. The constitutional language only notes 2024, and that is when we would be constitutionally dedicating 100% of these revenues. You're right, Representative Drazkowski, that a future legislature can change statute. But also note that there's also the possibility that the Article 2 of this bill could be vetoed. That is part of the governor's ability to do that. He, however, cannot, as you know, veto the constitutional amendment itself. So, yes, there are risks and opportunities involved in statute, but that's true with any statute we pass. Any other questions about the mechanics of the bill? Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering how this compares to what currently we passed last year with statutory language to be put auto parts but not constitutionally dedicated.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. If we go back to the spreadsheet, yep. You will see on line 10 of the spreadsheet, as Mr. Lee stated, that's current law. So in current law, next year in 2020, we'd go to 54%, then it actually drops to a 52% of these revenues going forward, and that would, without any further changes in statute, that 52% would carry through. So you can see on line 10 that the 52% number carries through all the way to 25.
Okay, and so, Mr. Chair, did we actually transfer all that money, or did we leave a bunch of money not transferred for transportation last year?
in the current biennium, we're only dedicating 12% of revenue, and the 54% and 52% figures are in the tails. So they're in the budget forecast, but, of course, budget forecasts are potentially changed by statute.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, so this full $255,000 actually went to transportation this year? Did we actually transfer that amount of money? Or you're saying we only transferred 12%?
I will turn to Mr. Lee to make sure you get your question answered and accurately.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, no, the 255 number on line 9 shows what Department of Revenue estimates is the amount of the general sales tax that's attributed to auto parts. So that's the total amount. So the only part of auto parts that went to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund is on line 2 at $31 million a year for fiscal 18 and 19. And then what is set in the tails is at $145 million in 2020 and 2021. So that's the amount that's going to HUTD. The rest is still going to the general fund.
Okay, just one follow-up.
One
quick follow-up. So we couldn't have put any more into transportation. We put everything we possibly could based on statutory for this last for 2018.
Mr. Lee. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bernardi, no, the auto parts was just a set number, so it was a result of a budget target rather than the total amount of auto parts that was available to the general fund.
And, Mr. Chair, that's what I'm trying to get at.
Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we could have put more money, but the targets were set that we actually didn't put more money in. Is that what?
Ms. Representative Bernardi, we could put the whole general fund into transportation if we wanted to. Probably is not going to happen. We arrived at these amounts based on our target last year and our target in the tails. So we're taking money out of the general fund currently, statutorily, but it's nowhere near 100% of this particular resource.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions about the mechanics of the bill? Members, we have a long list of testifiers. There are a couple of amendments. Representative Hornstein and I spoke before committee, and we're going to leave the amendments until the end of this hearing. We would like to get through the hearing this morning rather than having to come back tonight because we're expecting a rather long floor session on the floor. I think most folks are pretty familiar with this issue, but we will go through the list of testifiers that we have. I think everyone has it on their agenda. So those of you that are testifying, if you could come forward I'll call the next testifier, but if you could kind of be in the second chair ready to testify after the person before you finishes so that we don't have to wait for people to walk down to the testifier stand, that can speed up our work dramatically. And we are going to try and limit testimony to 2 minutes per testifier. With that, we will get started. The first testifier is Randy Gertis, American Council of Engineering Companies, followed by Sam Smith, Public Policy Coordinator from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. So if you could both come forward, Mr. Gertis, introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Randy Gertis. I'm a former president and CEO of SRF Consulting Group, a locally based transportation engineering and planning firm. And I am speaking here today on behalf of the American Council of Engineer Companies of Minnesota, ACEC. We want to talk a little bit about the sustainability of statutory shifts of general fund revenues for transportation. They have been implemented before as far back as 2001, as evidenced by the attempt to use revenue from the motor vehicle sales tax that was never fully implemented, as the funds were deemed to be needed elsewhere by subsequent legislatures during lean budget years. The fact is, revenue that is statutorily shifted from the general fund is not sustainable, as it is subject to future tax revenues and budget requirements. This unpredictability makes it impossible for agencies to efficiently plan for and implement future transportation infrastructure investments. This unpredictability also makes it difficult for members of ACEC and engineering community as a whole to make decisions regarding long-term investments in staff needs and technology. Extremely inefficient. At a time when we demand that our transportation agencies be more efficient in their use of tax revenue, we implement revenue streams that are highly inefficient in their delivery. It is our strong belief that the general fund revenue expected to be derived from the 2017 legislation will not be realized in the years to come without a constitutional dedication. Permanent revenue from the motor vehicle sales tax was only realized after a similar constitutional amendment was passed in 2006. The same now holds true in 2018 for revenues from this new revenue stream. Therefore, we fully support House File 4437, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Gierdes. Next, we have Sam Smith, followed by Vance Sternberg.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sam Smith, and I'm here representing the National Alliance on Mental Illness from Minnesota. On behalf of NAMI Minnesota, I am here today to speak in opposition to HF 4437. The more we dedicate funding to specific activities, the less funding legislators have to address current and the future needs of our state. Diverting scarce resources from the general fund to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund will exacerbate pressures felt in other parts of the state budget. At NAMI, we like to say our mental health system isn't broken. It was never built. We have made progress, but far too many Minnesotans do not have access to mental health treatment and community supports. This is just one of the many urgent needs that needs to be addressed by the Human Services budget. As legislators, it is up to you to make difficult choices about what to fund and how to address the priorities of our state. Calling for a constitutional amendment to dedicate funding to address some transportation issues is wrong. The general public does not know the intricacies of the state budget, nor do they hear about the various needs in our state, whether it's our mental health system, the opioid epidemic, care for older adults, children with complex medical needs, people who are homeless, our environment, and more. But you as legislators do, and it is your responsibility to listen to all those who come before you and to make these hard decisions. You believe that dedicating existing funding is the wrong idea and will lead to unintended consequences. NAMI urges you to oppose HF 4437. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Next, we have Vance Sternberg, followed by Taylor Putz.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Vance Sternberg. I'm a county commissioner from Blue Earth County, Minnesota. I'm also vice chair of the Transportation Steering Committee for the Association of Minnesota Counties and current president of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. Minnesota has a long history of constitutionally dedicating motor vehicle fees to ensure that construction projects can be delivered cost-effectively with stable, dedicated funds. It's difficult to plan and spend millions of dollars preparing major highway and bridge projects if future construction dollars are uncertain. Minnesota voters have supported ballot questions dedicating motor vehicle fees because they see this as a fair way to pay for road repair. Those who use the roads pay for the roads. In 2006, voters approved a constitutional amendment to dedicate the motor vehicle sales tax to highway and transit purposes. In 2005, we are faced with a situation that's very familiar with the one we face today. About one half of the revenue sales tax on motor vehicle MVEST was statutorily dedicated to transportation, while the rest was deposited in the general fund. Legislation to increase fuel tax and license tab fees, as well as increasing transit funding through metro sales tax dollars, was vetoed by the governor. The dedication of all the MVEST dollars was the only option available, and some concerns were raised at that time about the impact of other areas, government funding with general fund dollars, but the dedication of all the MVEST funds was phased in over 4 years to mitigate the impact of the general fund. Minnesota voters strongly supported the dedication of all MVEST dollars to transportation in 2006, and without passage of the MVEST amendment, the funding shortfall for transit would be over $500 million per year, and the shortfall for roads would be over $1 billion per year, or more than twice the shortfall we face today. The MVEST dollars continue to grow and continue to provide roads and transit systems with stable, dependable funding that cannot be diverted to other things. The general fund has also grown. The dedication for sales tax on auto parts doesn't preclude pursuing other funding packages in the future, just as a package for MVEST amendment in 2006 didn't prevent the legislature from passing a major transportation funding package in 2008. The option you have today is an option that we can pursue now to address critical road and bridge needs on the state system. County state aid system and municipal state aid street system, and waiting will only result in more deterioration of our roads and bridges. We urge your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sternberg. Next, we have Taylor Putz, followed by Phil Qualley.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Taylor Putz with the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, representing more than 2,000 of the state's nonprofit organizations. I'm here to respectfully oppose House File 4437 for three reasons. First, nonprofits are important partners with government in delivering essential services that build strong and thriving communities. House File 4437 would disrupt this partnership by dedicating certain general fund revenues towards the state's transportation fund without replacing them. This would leave fewer resources that help support the work of nonprofits in the communities they partner with every day. Secondly, it's important to stress that nonprofit employers are an important source of stable employment for Minnesotans. In 2016, nearly 12% of all employees in the state were employed by a nonprofit organization. The proposed legislation would hurt the strong source of economic growth that the nonprofit sector provides in Minnesota. Lastly, budget cuts hurt us all when we should instead be focusing on policies that move us all forward. Minnesotans interact with nonprofit organizations in numerous ways without realizing it. I urge you to find other ways that would fund our transportation needs that do not harm the partnership between our two sectors and create unintended consequences on our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Putz. It looks like the train is late today, and Mr. Qualley is not with us, apparently, so we're going to move on to Hannah Trossel, and followed by Barry Davies. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Hannah Trossel. I live in St. Paul now, but I'm from the Brainerd Lakes area. And give me one moment. A few years ago, I sat in front of a very similar committee and described the impact underfunding transportation would have on young people like myself. I warned that if we didn't have a sustainable solution that fixed our roads and bridges and improve transit around the state, young people will have to leave. This constitutional amendment does little to solve this continued funding gap. It only serves to remove money from the general fund. Getting around in the Twin Cities to my workplace and driving up north to visit my parents remains terrible. So I've decided to leave the state for grad school. Maybe I'll come back, but none of my older brothers and sisters have returned when they left. You need to figure out a better way to fund our transportation network, or you will continue to drive young people away from Minnesota. This constitutional amendment is not the answer. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Trossel. Mr. Davies, followed by Bradley Peterson.
Good morning. My name is Barry Davies. I'm the business manager of Ironworkers Local 512, and our union supports House File 4437. The men and women of Local 512 build the bridges that Minnesotans travel on every day. We are highly skilled, expertly trained workers who depend upon transportation funding to provide for our families. Due to recent slowdowns, we have hundreds of members laid off, 15% right here in the metro area and about 30% in northern Minnesota. These women and men are waiting for the call to go back to work. In construction, you build yourself out of a job and then you wait for the next one to start. That is why we need reliable funding to keep the projects coming, to address the transportation needs of the state, and to keep union members working. Funding transportation projects supports good-paying, middle-class jobs with privately funded health care, retirement, and even paid parental leave benefits. Please support this important piece of legislation and put our people to work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davies. Mr. Peterson, followed by Bentley Graves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bradley Peterson, here today on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, representing 96 cities outside of the 7-county metro area, speaking in opposition to this bill. First, I want to say that I think everyone in this room agrees that we need to have more money for transportation in our transportation system. But where that money comes from matters. And this bill brings us to the intersection of two of the legislature's greatest responsibilities, the handling of care of our state's constitution and the handling of care of our state's general fund. We are opposed to this bill because of our concern about the potential impact of destabilizing the general fund and that impact on local government aid. LGA, as you all know, helps cities across Minnesota, especially in rural Minnesota, provide services and quality of life amenities such as police and fire protection, infrastructure, parks and libraries, all things that you need to have in order to have strong, thriving communities. The current fact is that we are not dealing from a position of strength when it comes to our fiscal situation. What meager surplus there is will be spent by this legislature on tax conformity, the pension bill, and other items. And the tails in all of these bills are bigger in the out years, including the tax bill from last year. Over the past two budget forecasts, we have ping-ponged between deficit and surplus, and no one knows what the future will hold. I would suggest that at this time we cannot afford to put this on the ballot. And while this won't create the next deficit, it will be a compounding factor in its severity and the legislature's flexibility in order to deal with it. And so, members, I would urge you to oppose this. Look for other transportation funding solutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Gray is followed by a unnamed representative from Education Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We strongly support House File 4437 and the DE2 amendment. Minnesota employers around the state rely upon a safe, efficient, and reliable transportation system to get their goods to market, to get their customers and their employees to their door. This legislation builds on the very important work that was done last session by the governor and the legislature to bring significant new investment into the state's transportation system and do so with a new funding source that broadens the base of support for the system beyond the traditional sources of the gas tax and the motor vehicle tax and registration fees, that being the motor vehicle sales or the sales tax on auto parts that we're talking about today. This constitutional amendment would do two things. One, it would ensure that 100% of those resources are used for transportation, and two, to ensure that those resources grow over time to help offset the growing cost of construction. The funding sources that we have in place, the largest one of which is the gas tax, is frankly a flat funding source over time and is losing its buying power. And this will bring an important new revenue stream into the transportation system to, again, ensure that our resources grow over time with the needs of the system. We strongly support this amendment. We'd urge you to support it, and happy to answer any questions that folks may have for the business community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Our representative from Ed, Minnesota, followed by Russell Hess. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Of course. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bevan O'Brien. I'm a second-grade teacher in the Stillwater School District. Our schools rely on the general fund. We have an enormous special education and EL cross-subsidy. We have a teacher shortage that is growing more and more every year. Our kids need pre-K and more affordable higher education. But most important is the crisis facing our students' mental health needs. Minnesota ranks 48th in the nation when it comes to counselor-to-student ratio. This year I teach in a brand-new school with about 435 students. We have one half-time school psychologist and one full-time school social worker for 435 children. As a classroom teacher, I work very hard to establish strong relationships with my students. We do a great deal of conflict resolution and social skills training throughout the daily schedule. I'm proud to say that my classroom is a place where children feel empowered and connected and loved. But I rely on mental health experts to help students whose lives and circumstances require more intervention. Students who are facing risks and challenges above and beyond what typical 7- and 8-year-olds face. Students who are grieving, students with anxiety, students experiencing chronic and episodic stress that impacts their ability to connect with their peers and focus on learning. School social workers are funded to provide services to the general education population. They are highly trained problem solvers, counselors, and allies for struggling students. The school social workers I have known in my career are, to a one, among the most empathetic and resourceful colleagues in their respective buildings. They are also the most stretched. They're the ones called when their child is in crisis, has lost control, or needs a safe space to regroup. Let me restate that in my building there are 1.5 trained mental health professionals to help over 430 young learners, any number of whom may have persistent or episodic mental health needs on any given day. The 0.5 psych position means that there is only one mental health professional for half of each week. Often that means, in an all-hands-on-deck crisis situation, regular ed students in need are unable to receive school social worker services because she has to work triage and put out a fire. This is unworkable and unsustainable. It's reactive, not proactive. It can be downright dangerous. The general fund can help us hire much-needed school counselors and psychs. We have to be funded and staffed in a way that will get us beyond putting out fires. How can you say you want our schools to be safer, but at the same time remove the resources that can make that happen? Our students and schools are counting on you. Please don't divert funding away from us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Brien. Next we have Russell Hess, followed by Fred Nolan.
Chair Torkelson and members of the committee, my name is Russell Hess, and I am the legislative director for the Laborers Union of Minnesota and North Dakota. We represent over 12,000 construction workers who build and maintain Minnesota's infrastructure. We are in support of House File 4437 and would like to thank Chair Torkelson and the committee for their work on this important issue. Our transportation system is about more than interchanges and interstates, more than roads and bridges. It's about the kids we bus to school on some of the deadliest roads around. It's about the farmers who have to pay more to move their goods to market because the roads can't handle bigger trucks. It's about communities like mine that struggle to attract new businesses so they can thrive and grow because the products they produce in those small towns can't get to market. This bill will provide more funding to alleviate some of the failures of our system. The projects created will provide more opportunities for our members to put food on their families' tables, save for their children's education, or buy a new ATV or snowmobile if that's what they want to do with it. The funding for small cities in particular means they might be able to work a little closer to home so they can make it to a school concert or a baseball game. Maybe most importantly, it can give them a little more peace of mind that if they choose construction as a career, there will be enough projects getting done to keep them working. The Laborers Union urges you to support HF 4437. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hess. Next we have Mr. Nolan, followed by Ms. Freda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Fred Nolan, the Minnesota Rural Education Association Executive Director, representing 224 rural school districts educating about 230,000 kids daily. I'm here testifying in opposition to House File 4437. Rural schools are extremely dependent on the state education formula. When the general fund is healthy, we've seen inflationary increases of 2%. When the general fund is in trouble, we see zero and fall behind. This proposed constitutional amendment will have the effect of permanently depressing the general fund and put rural schools at risk. Let me give you three numbers to put this in context. Get your pencils ready. First, the Metro 7 County household income as a percentage of the rural household income is 43% higher. That's a $21,500 difference. Metro County referendum property value per pupil is 53% higher. The result is Metro 7 County operating referendums per pupil is 72% higher than in rural Minnesota. That's a $685 difference. To put that in context of the formula, if the formula plus the operating referendum were the formula, rural schools would be at 89%, 11% behind. And rural schools are starting at that place behind with significantly less household income and less property value to seek the local funding to make up the difference. I repeat, rural schools are extremely dependent on the formula, which is, yes, dependent on the general fund. We in rural Minnesota need good roads, a good working environment, and good education in the long run to thrive. We don't get there by robbing one to pay the other. MREA urges you to vote no and look for other sources for good roads. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nolan. Ms. Bryduck, followed by Jim McDonough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Abby Bryduck. I am the Government Affairs Director of the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. First, I just want to point out that we've had some discussion about why does this need to be a constitutional amendment? Why does transportation need to be addressed in the Constitution? Well, many may know that there is currently an entire article of our Constitution dedicated to transportation funding because of the difficulties we see today in increasing funding, the importance of having a consistent cash flow for roads and bridge funding. It is in the Constitution so that we don't have to have these battles year after year pitting different state issues against each other. So But everyone would agree here, as has been said, that infrastructure is a priority and that we would also agree that it's underfunded. The Transportation Finance Advisory Committee, as some of you may remember, identified an annual gap of at least $600 million a year just to keep roads at their current condition, and that does not include safety improvements or any expansions. If this amendment were to pass, it would be a permanent increase of more than a third of that, which increases over time. Many have asked, why don't we just raise the gas tax? Well, the reality is that we've had two gas tax increases in the last 30 years, a total of 11.5 cents. That's the increase that we've gotten from our current main funding system. The amount under discussion today is the equivalent of almost a 9-cent gas tax increase that grows over time. This is not insignificant. Unfortunately, this debate has been characterized as an either-or proposition. You know, in a $43 billion budget, this would represent a 0.6% shift in funding. And I think our legislature is well-equipped to address many of the state priorities, including transportation in this budget. We know Minnesotans support this. Polling shows that 76% of Minnesotans across all political spectrums think that the sales tax on auto parts should go to transportation funding. I also wanted to add that we are getting reports of layoffs in the road construction industry in a time where we have overall construction workforce shortage. This is a significant bit of information. So while we're seeing a lot of growth in other areas of construction, our road construction industry is hurting. And those jobs are just as important as the other jobs that we're talking about today. I think we can all agree. So, again, AGC strongly supports this bill, and we thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Ms. Breidlich. Mr. McDonough, followed by Patrick Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Jim McDonough, Ramsey County Commissioner. For the 18 years I've been a county commissioner, I've been before this committee every year advocating for a comprehensive, balanced, dedicated funding source for roads, bridges, and transit. Today I'm before this committee to argue against this constitutional amendment. You've heard about the successes we've had over the last decade and a half, the unbest issues, the override. All those occurred because we drove unity with all the partners, business, labor, counties, cities, schools, all the folks that had a stake in this. We came together and we worked on a proposal that we could all get behind and support. This constitutional amendment is dividing that. It is taking that unity apart. As elected officials, we do our best work when we plant trees that will never benefit from the shade. This bill digs a hole that most of you will never have to work to prevent people from falling into, that most of you will never have to work to help fill that hole. For over a decade, we have done just that. Business, labor, schools, counties, transit advocates, rural, urban, suburban, we've come together to address the funding needs in a comprehensive, balanced, dedicated way. We have a lot more work to do on that. The only successful way we're going to be able to do that is to do that unified. This bill drives at the division. This tears apart the unity that we've worked so hard for over the last dozen years. Our job as elected officials is to try to drive unity, to bring people together across this state, to ensure that everybody feels that they have a stake in the work we do. And putting this before the voters will drive division in the people that we are trying to bring together. This not only will be a costly bill in dollars to try to get passed in November, it will be a costly bill in the divisions that we create and the unity that we will be taking apart that we've worked so hard for over the last dozen years. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. McDonough. Patrick Murray, followed by Steve Adams.
Good morning, Chair Torkelson and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4437. My name is Patrick Murray. I'm the Senior Director of Government and Member Relations for Cooperative Network. We are a two-state trade association of over 400 cooperatives in Minnesota and Wisconsin. We appreciate you bringing this legislation forward that, if advanced to voters and approved this fall, will infuse much-needed funding into Minnesota's statewide road and bridge system. We also appreciate your efforts, along with your legislative colleagues, to address the transportation funding issue during the 2017 session. In addition to the general public, our cooperative members who would benefit from the passage of House File 4437 include our agriculture, dairy, farm supply, and processing cooperatives. These co-ops are integral to Minnesota's agriculture economy as well as the state's economy. These co-ops deliver commodities, fuel, and inputs to our member owners throughout the state, as well as throughout markets in the country, as well as the world. Minnesota is one of the top producing states for soybeans, corn, sugar beets, wild rice, wheat, canola, potatoes, sunflower, as well as in dairy production. In order to assist these farmers and their co-ops, we use our road and bridge system on a daily basis, cooperative networks, member-driven resolutions supporting efficient, well-maintained transportation network of roads and bridges that are vital to the future of the state's economy for the many co-ops and their member owners. In closing, again, Cooperative Network supports House File 4437, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Mr. Adams, followed by Jim Wafla.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson and members of the committee. My name is Steve Adams. I'm the chair of Association of Metropolitan School Districts. We represent 41 K through 12 school districts, including St. Cloud and Rochester, six intermediate and educational cooperative districts, and three integration districts. I'm also speaking on behalf of the students that we serve, which represent nearly two-thirds of the students in the state of Minnesota. And unfortunately, they could not be here with me today as they had other plans. I'm here to speak in opposition to House File 4437. As you are well aware, the state's general fund provides funding for state's transportation, education, social services, and local government needs. This bill would elevate transportation projects above all those other needs by mandating that much-needed dollars be diverted away from other programs that rely on the general fund and thereby reduce the legislature's flexibility to budget expenditures in the future. I'm at a loss to understand why the legislature would want to tie its hands regarding future budgetary needs. The state's per-pupil funding for K-12 education, which is a constitutionally mandated right, by the way, has been reduced by nearly $600 per student in inflation-adjusted dollars since 2003. In addition, the state has never funded its share of mandated special education services, a state underfunding which amounts to approximately $250 million statewide this school year, and that amount has to be made up by our local taxpayers. There are taxes that are already constitutionally earmarked for transportation, the gas tax, license tab fees, and motor vehicle sales taxes. A responsible legislature would simply raise the necessary funds by slightly increasing those taxes and fees. To recommend a constitutional amendment to raise those funds by raiding our K-12 students' piggy bank is unconscionable, in my opinion. Additionally, putting a constitutional amendment on the November ballot would have other consequences, like inviting advocates for other services to push for constitutionally dedicated revenue of their own, including education. I can guarantee you that I will be back to ask for a dedicated education revenue stream if this bill passes. You already have the tools you need, constitutionally dedicated taxes and the authority to meet the state's transportation needs. I urge you to use them and vote against House File 4437.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Next, we have Jim Wafler, followed by Gary Amoroso.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Wafler. I represent the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. Our 35 contractors and other members are responsible for about 80% of Minnesota's roads, and we are very sensitive to the issue of highway funding. We support House File 4437, the delete everything, as offered today. I will say we are supportive primarily because we see no realistic alternative to permanent funding of roads and bridges in Minnesota at the present time. And I should add, this amendment represents only 0.5% of the state general fund. And we also know that the unmet need on our road systems is very significant and is growing. We want to address this problem now. We simply cannot wait any longer. We are confident the people of Minnesota will support this initiative, and we will work hard to ensure its success at the ballot box. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wafler. We have Gary Amoroso, followed by Jeremy Estenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Amoroso. I serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, representing the state superintendents within our state, as well as other district-level administrators in our public schools. Many of the things that I was going to mention have been already stated, so I'll be very brief in that sharing that we are opposed to this constitutional amendment. As you've heard, our concern is, like many, that by dedicating a percent of the resources from the general fund, that has the potential impact of reducing funds that are available to E-12 education on a yearly basis, and that's where we get most of our funding from the state is through the general fund. It's important to note that we all want good roads. Nobody's going to argue that. We want safe bridges, but we don't want to do it at the potential expense of the 850,000 public school students in our state. So I'd ask you to consider strongly other types of solutions in order to provide us with safe roads, but not at the expense potentially of impacting the resources available for E-12 students. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Next we have Jeremy Estenson, followed by William Schoyer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeremy Estenson. I work for the law firm of Stinson Leonard Street, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Trucking Association. And I'm here to testify in support of House File 4437, the constitutional amendment, to dedicate auto parts and auto repair sales tax to improving roads and bridges. Trucking is the lifeblood of Minnesota's economy. 78% of the state's manufactured goods travel on truck. Turkeys from Wilmer, windows from War Road, computers from Rochester. If you have it, a truck brought it. 68% of Minnesota communities rely exclusively on truck transportation for everything that goes in and out. That means no air, no rail, no water. To keep the trucks moving our local economies thriving, we need to maintain and grow our system of roads and bridges. We believe constitutionally dedicating the auto parts and auto sales tax is critical. Auto parts and sales tax is critical to meeting our funding needs. We urge you to vote yes for roads and support this constitutional amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Estenson. We have William Schroyer, followed by Jason George.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is William Schroer. I'm executive director of East Metro Strong. We're a partnership between Ramsey and Washington counties, six cities, and East Metro employers. We're also members of Transportation Forward, a statewide coalition of more than 50 public and private entities, and testify today on their behalf as well. Our public and private members agree that transit is needed, wanted, and works, both in the metro and statewide. Greater MSP Regional Indicators Dashboard, which I look around the room and I know that a lot of the organizations in this room have signed on to, has established that access to jobs by transit is a critical measure of economic competitiveness for this region and this state. According to the region's economic development organization, Greater MSP, we are below our chosen peers and falling. We need to respond. Polling for the St. Paul Chamber and the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce have found that Minnesota voters believe that public transit improvements would benefit not only the state, but them personally. Every time we poll, we find that solid majorities of voters back additional funds going into public transit projects. Washington County polled its constituents last year, the very opposite of a push poll. Just tell us what you think as our constituents, and found that the number one concern of their constituents in Washington County is lack of public transit. There was a record ridership last year on the Blue Line, the Green Line, and the A Line. We ought to be building on these successes and responding to these needs. Instead, Metro Transit in the region and greater Minnesota transit agencies face substantial structural deficits. We can tell all these stories about the region. We can tell them about transit in greater Minnesota. All kinds of people need more choices. This constitutional amendment makes transportation policy, but ignores a critical part of our transportation system throughout the state. HF 4437 ignores the needs that have been identified by employers in the business community, by local governments, by constituents across Minnesota. We oppose legislation that ignores so many transportation needs of so many transportation users in all parts of the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schroer. Next we have Jason George, followed by Judd Chet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jason George. I'm the legislative director for the Operating Engineers Local 49. I work for 13,500 or so heavy equipment operators who build and maintain the infrastructure of this state with our fellow crafts. I want to thank the chairman for his leadership on this and the committee for bringing this important and thoughtful proposal forward. In our view, this amendment makes common sense. Dedicating less than 1% of the state budget to what should be one of the core functions of government, which is building our state's infrastructure, is a prudent and reasonable thing to do. So that's probably why polling shows, as indicated before, that 76% of Minnesotans would vote yes if they're given the chance. If passed and supported by the public, this amendment will create thousands of good-paying construction jobs for years to come. These jobs will feed families, raise kids, and that should matter more than it seems to these days. It's a frustrating time for those of us that care about infrastructure jobs and the people that work for them. We are told we can't build pipelines because we're destroying the climate. We're told we can't build a mine because we'll destroy the water. And now we're being told we can't build roads and bridges because we can't fund schools if we do. We disagree with all of those statements strongly. Of course, this kind of rhetoric is ridiculous to most Minnesotans outside of the legislative bubble, but unfortunately, it has been effective of late and led to inaction on critical infrastructure projects. The truth is, we can build pipelines and mine and protect our environment at the same time. And yes, we can spend less than 1% of the state's budget to address our critical infrastructure needs without boarding up our schools. I ask the committee and this legislature to stop listening to the rhetoric and start listening to the common sense people of Minnesota. Let them vote on this amendment. If you do, they will pass it, and our folks can get to work building this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. George. Next, apparently Judge Shetman is on the train with Phil Qualley, so we're going to move on to Alicia Munson, followed by Carrie Ann Alleman.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Alicia Munson. I'm the Public Policy Director for the ARC Minnesota. I'm speaking today on behalf of my organization as well as the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living, the Minnesota Brain Injury Alliance, the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, and the Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, nonprofit advocacy organizations that work to promote the independence and inclusion of people with disabilities. Our organizations stand in opposition to House File 4437, the proposed amendment to the state constitution on transportation funding. While we understand proponents' reasoning for seeking dedicated sales tax revenue collected on vehicle parts and repairs for transportation needs, as the amendment proposes, this will result in less funding in the state budget for critical health and human services priorities. Each legislative session, members of the disability community work in coalition to advance cost-effective legislation aimed at achieving positive outcomes and equity for Minnesotans with disabilities while working against proposals that would cut health and human services funding and supports. If this transportation amendment is adopted, advocates will face even more barriers to obtaining adequate funds for disability services that support lives of independence and inclusion in the community. Any divergence of resources away from the general fund, as this constitutional amendment aims to do, would force our state to make incredibly hard choices about the quality of services available to Minnesotans with disabilities, as well as eligibility criteria. The amendment would also jeopardize funding for other parts of the transportation budget, as disability advocates have been strong supporters of transportation options that help people with disabilities be more independent and included in their communities, including public transit and specialized transit systems like Metro Mobility. Similar to human services, transit funding would compete for fewer general fund dollars, possibly leading to service cuts and or fare increases for people who often struggle financially. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns and for your consideration of the impact that this proposal would have on Minnesotans with disabilities. We urge you to vote no on House File 4437 and to consider the negative policy implications of similar constitutional amendments that divert funds from Minnesota's general fund. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Munson. Next, we have Carrie Ann Alleman, followed by Rick Varco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carrie Ann Alleman. I am the clerk for Harris Township up in Itasca County, and I also work for the Minnesota Association of Townships. When it comes to transportation, I'm very well versed on how the roads are as I travel from Grand Rapids down here weekly and sometimes on a daily basis. We are here in support of the House File 4437. Townships are responsible for 56,000 miles of roads in the state. Most of our roads, because of the increased truck weights, have become delinquent and make it unsafe for school buses, for our semi-trucks, for ag trucks, and for just everybody else to travel on the roads. By constitutionally dedicating these funds, we would actually make it so we don't have to come back every single year to ask for more money. For the road authorities, we would not have to come back every single year to ask for more funding. please support this fund and let it go to the constitutional amendment and let it be on the ballots this fall. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alleman. Next, we have Rick Varco, followed by Clark Goldenrod.
Good morning, Chairman Torkelson and members of the committee. My name is Rick Varco. I am testifying on behalf of SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. SEIU Healthcare Minnesota represents 35,000 healthcare workers around the state in hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and self-directed home care. We oppose House File 4437. To begin, as a driver, I know we need more money for roads. Minnesota should spend money on a robust highway program. But this bill does not increase the amount of money we have for roads. It just fences off some money from other necessary priorities. I share the frustration of transportation advocates in this room. Year after year, I brought SEIU nursing home workers here to secure better funding for care. But despite powerful bipartisan support, at the end of session, we always seemed to fall short. It was frustrating. But at least nursing home workers knew they had been heard by the people with the power to decide. When you put funding decisions into the Constitution, you take them out of our collective hands. How do you hold current legislators accountable for something done by their predecessors? Second, I'm not an economist or a demographer, but I know the cost of long-term care will continue to increase and increase at a faster rate. Minnesota faces a silver tsunami of an aging population and a shrinking pool of workers to provide the care they need. In 2015, Governor Dayton, a DFL Senate, and a Republican House passed a huge bipartisan reform of our nursing home reimbursement system. The only argument was who deserved the most credit for passing it. But if you permanently divert money out of the general fund, you put our nursing homes at risk. Nursing home care is not going to get less expensive, and the demand is only going to grow. The more money you move out of the general fund, the more likely future legislators will be unable to meet the commitment to our seniors. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Varco. Next, I have Clark Goldenrod. Thank you. And followed by Max Hall.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Clark Goldenrod, and I'm the Senior Policy Analyst with the Minnesota Budget Project. We are an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, and we identify and promote policy solutions that expand opportunity to all Minnesotans. And we particularly work in the areas of tech, budget, and economic security. And I'd like to talk about two of our concerns with House File 4437 today. One, it would lock down today's budget priorities and limit choices for the future. And two, this bill would take money out of the state's general fund, leaving fewer resources for other priorities. So that first concern, House File 4437 locks down today's budget choices and limits our ability to address tomorrow's needs. By putting this language into our state's constitution, we tie future policymakers' hands and make it more difficult to adapt to new funding priorities or respond to changing budget and economic conditions, such as changes in federal funding or a greater need for community services to meet the needs of an aging population. And that brings me to our second concern. This bill would take money out of the state's general fund, leaving fewer resources for other priorities. The general fund is the state's largest and most flexible fund, but by permanently taking away these dollars, this bill would make it harder to pay for other priorities, including supporting our schools, bringing down the cost of tuition, or job training to meet the needs of our employers for skilled workers. We agree that it's important to fund our state's transportation needs. However, permanently shifting funding away from other areas of the budget just isn't the right path. Thanks again for the opportunity to testify, and we ask that you do not support House File 4437.
Thank you, Ms. Goldenrod. Next, we have Max Hall, followed by Barb Thoman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Max Hall, legislative representative with AFSCME Council 5. We're a public employee union representing more than 43,000 Minnesotans. We are strongly opposed to House File 4437, a proposal to place a constitutional amendment question on the ballot here in November of 2018. If this bill passes, is placed on the ballot in November, and passes by voters, it would permanently shift money away from the state's general fund into a separate transportation account and would pit transportation priorities against health care, K-12 education, higher education, local government aid, county program aid, and other services and appropriations this state funds. AFSCME Council 5 believes that raising new revenue is the responsible path to a long-term and sustainable transportation funding package. Robbing the state's general fund and placing such a provision into Minnesota's constitution is not an equitable solution. It fills one funding hole by just creating an additional one. We proudly represent members who are employed by the Minnesota Department of Transportation, primarily in the three main areas of maintenance, inspection, and design, all of which are funded through general fund appropriations. Our members support new revenue for transportation and oppose taking critical resources from other services the state provides. We would urge members of this committee to oppose this bill. However, if this bill passes, is placed on the ballot in November of 2018, we would encourage Minnesotans to vote no on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Finally, I have Barb Thoman. If there are others who wish to testify for or against this bill, please step forward and give your name to the page. We have a few extra minutes. We could take a few more testifiers. Ms. Thoman, please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Barb Thoman. I'm a retired Minnesotan. I'm opposed to House File 4437. Transportation received $2.1 billion in constitutionally dedicated money in 2017, $2.1 billion. There's been an average annual increase in revenue into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund of approximately 6% per year over the last 10 years. If you look at, I put this little spreadsheet together last night. All three categories of revenue into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund have increased significantly in the last 10 years, the motor fuel tax, the vehicle registration fee, and MVEST. There's no other state government program that receives constitutionally dedicated money, especially at this level. No other government program has received a 6% annual increase in dedicated state revenue. Every state program, whether it's the University of Minnesota or wastewater treatment facilities, or any other program would like to have the constitutionally dedicated revenue, and especially at this level. I think this is dubious state policy. It's not new money. It limits the state's flexibility in hard times. It limits your ability to respond to shortfalls. It shortchanges city streets. When I drive around the state and I look at where are the biggest potholes, they're on city streets. But the Highway User Tax Distribution Formula from 1956 shortchanges city streets. So if you put all this dedicated money into the highway fund, it's going to continue to shortchange city streets. It also isn't multimodal. It focuses on expansion, not maintenance. I really hope that you will oppose this constitutional amendment. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Thoman. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Ryan Timlin. I'm president of Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005. We represent 2,600 transit workers across the state of Minnesota, Minneapolis and Twin Cities area, but also Rochester, Minnesota. I'm here to speak against the constitutional amendment for the fact that we support the infrastructure and building of the roads and bridges, and we support our building trades, brothers and sisters. We do want them to have jobs, but we feel this is short-sighted, as many have stated before, the education, health care, but for transit workers as a whole. But not only the transit workers, the riders. It's millions of riders take our system tens of millions take our services daily, and we provide massive service to Fortune 500 companies and small businesses in the Twin Cities area, but not only that, in smaller communities outside of Metro Transit itself. In Rochester and Duluth, transit workers provide services for workers to go and produce for the broader good of society. We do want to see our infrastructure built, but we feel this is short-sighted and dividing us as workers. We need to stand together, building trades and public sector workers, to fight for more funding for all, and I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Timlin. Next, we have Chris Stinson, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Chris Stinson. I sent you a letter when I saw my name wasn't on the list. It's remarkably similar to what I'm going to say, so you do with it what you want. I work for SEIU Local 284. We represent bus drivers, paraprofessionals, food service workers, early learning employees, clerical staff, custodians, and higher ed faculty throughout the state of Minnesota. Our local is working for a future where students in every Minnesota school have all that they need to succeed from pre-K to career, and I'm here today to oppose House File 4437. Constitutionally dedicating funds to transportation will mean that fewer resources are available for public schools, early childhood education, and college affordability. Minnesota has long had a reputation as a state that values investment in the common good and education for all as a path to prosperity. However, we've grown accustomed to reaping the benefits of past commitments rather than keeping that same promise for future generations. This has led to warning signs for students of all ages in every corner of the state. From student support expenditures that are the lowest in the nation to some of the nation's largest racial disparities in education outcomes, graduation rates, and disciplinary actions, skyrocketing tuition costs are locking many Minnesotans into crippling debt and closing the doors to higher learning for many others. At a time when we need to address racial and geographic disparities in our schools, it's unwise to handcuff future legislators by locking in spending for just one area of the budget. I encourage each of you to vote no.
Thank you, Mr. Stinson. That concludes the list of testifiers. At this point, I'm going to renew my motion on House File 4427 to be passed as 4437 to be passed as amended to the Tax Committee. We do have a couple of amendments before us. We have first the A2. Representative, I'm not sure who's.
Mr. Chair, that's I believe Representative Bernardi will be
Representative Bernardi
presenting that.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, I was momentarily distracted. I think I misspoke, Representative Bernardi. We have not yet amended the bill, but so I'm going to do my own amendment first,
okay,
if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's good. It'd be
after that long list of testifiers, I almost forgot what we did earlier on. So first, I will move the DE2 that we've already talked about. Any more questions on the DE2? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE2 to get the bill in the shape the author would like, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. The bill is amended with the DE2. Now we'll move on to the A2, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amendment is what I call the full transparency amendment for voters. And it brings to language the ballot question so that it fully describes what the voters are voting on this constitutional amendment. I think that that's a fair thing to do for the public. You know, it doesn't raise any new revenue, so the consequences of it are that it could reduce support available for the general fund for E12 education, higher education, elderly services, health care, disability services, and local government aid. So I propose this amendment, and I ask members for your support that we give the public the whole truth of the impact of this constitutional amendment on the things that Minnesotans really care about. People want affordable health care. People want a world-class education system. We value our veterans. We value our seniors. And it's important to know how this dedicated funding would impact the general fund that supports all those services.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to speak in support of this amendment. I think it's only appropriate that we inform the voters of the real impact of what the constitutional amendment would do. And I'd like to remind ourselves that this is very real stuff. It was real last year during a time of surplus when we diverted money from the general fund to build roads and bridges, and there was a real impact. And the real impact that was real clear to me was a similar amount of money was needed to provide for that 5% raise that our home health care workers, our personal care attendants drastically need. I think everyone in this room knows that that's a fact. We have a crippling industry. There was an impact during a time of surplus on the services that Representative Bernardi has mentioned in the amendment. Let's also remember, go back to the plenty years when there was deficit after deficit after deficit, when there was real impact and struggle to solve a budget problem. I knew that as a citizen, and I watched it. It wasn't pretty. And particularly, I'm thinking about the drastic cuts to local government aid that impacted communities in my district and the cuts to education. And it had particularly a dramatic impact on rural Minnesota. Let's remember Mr. Nolan's testimony about the lack of property tax base in rural Minnesota
has so that that we face in rural Minnesota a bigger challenge when we don't have the funds available to support our schools and the fundamental services and local government aid. I think it behooves us as a committee to add this language to the constitutional amendment. I encourage a yes vote.
Representative Bernardi?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd request a roll call, please. A roll call on the
amendment. Thank you. Roll call being requested. Roll call won't be allowed. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would, for full disclosure, I guess I would recommend voting against this particular amendment because, as we heard in the description of what this amendment would do, the comments and the actual words were that these could reduce the support available for general fund because we can't guarantee what the legislature in the future might be. They might still fully fund K-12 and all these things with increased values, et cetera. But this doesn't say that. It said it will reduce it. It would reduce the support available, which is certainly a perception that we can all disagree with, and we could all say that, well, this is what I believe. But we're not doing that with a constitutional amendment. We're telling the people when we put the vote and the ballot language together what is actually going to be on. So, and just as we heard about how difficult it was dealing with the deficits in 2009 and later, you know, I looked at my same budget with the same disregard of how tough it was balancing budget with reducing income that I also received. So this is part of what government really is all about and what legislature is responsible for. And this amendment to add this language, I believe, is just as misleading. And so I would certainly urge a no vote.
Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just heard from the representative that we could be looking at a reduction in general fund expenditures for other purposes, given if this amendment were to, or the if the bill was to pass. But this amendment actually does make clear that there is a reduction of services, and that said, what we didn't hear from the people, the proponents of this of the underlying bill, is what they would do to backfill any deficits. You know, when you take that money out of the general fund, what did you do to backfill it? We heard numbers of 12,000 union members in one union, 13,000 another. These good people are struggling for the wages, but we also heard numbers of 850,000 students statewide that are going to take a beating if there's no mechanism to backfill the money for the general fund. I don't know how many grandmothers in nursing homes are going to suffer because they don't have the proper care. We heard from a number of testifiers about all the evils of this bill, and I believe all of them. So I would say to the proponents of this bill, please figure out a mechanism to backfill if you're serious about this constitutional amendment, because the effects of this are just disastrous to so many Minnesotans. I appreciate the amendment, and again, to the bill, it's inadequate.
Representative Mason.
Thank you very much. And I understand why this bill is necessary, and it's the same reason it was necessary when we passed a similar thing in 2008. But I think Representative Peterson reminded me of something. If you'll remember...
Petersburg,
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Representative Mason.
Thank you. If you talk to our local school districts, they are still trying to recover from the cuts made during the Pawlenty administration. So even though we've had surpluses, we still haven't had to, haven't been able to address and get our education system current. We know what crisis the higher ed is in. We're not addressing that issue. And I talk time and again about what we need to do for our home health care workers. That is an industry in crisis. And I, to me, it's unconscionable that we don't have bills to do that. Okay, the reason, again, we have good support for our transportation system, but I find it really difficult. Are we going to get to a system where we have to have certain amounts going to education? Are we going to give up control of everything by keep doing similar constitutional amendments? And I think that's our biggest discussion point. Do we have the ability, do we have the guts to do what we need to do, or are we going to give up and just go the easy route and put the constitutional amendment in? And are we going to do that for every single issue that we have to fund?
Thank you, Representative Mason. With that, we will proceed to the roll call vote on the A2 amendment. Chair votes no.
Petersburg.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Baker. Barr.
No.
Bernardi.
Yes.
Daniels.
No.
Draskowski.
No.
Gunther.
No.
Hausman. Howe.
Nay.
Johnson.
Yes.
Keel.
No.
Kosnick. Lucero.
No.
Mason.
Yes.
Miller.
No.
Nelson.
Yes.
Brerick.
No.
Rosenthal.
Yes.
Runbeck.
No.
Salk.
Yes.
Sundin.
Yes.
There being 12 nays and 8 ayes, the amendment fails. Next, we have the A3 amendment. I believe that is Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we had a number of testifiers talk about the fact that this constitutional amendment that's before us has a glaring omission, and that is the inclusion of both rural and metropolitan transit funding. And so what this A3 amendment does is simply repeat the funding formula that we had in the previous constitutional amendment that was passed in 2006 related to the motor vehicle sales tax. So we have the 60-40 breakdown, and again, this was bipartisanly agreed to back then and passed overwhelmingly. 60% roads and bridges, 40% transit, and then that transit allocation is split between Metro Transit, Metropolitan Transit programs, and Greater Minnesota Transit programs. So we're just simply going to the formula that was used in the successful passage of the previous constitutional amendment. And I thought there was some excellent testimony on this. You know, Commissioner McDonough talked about how divisive this is. I thought that that was an important point, you know, without the inclusion of transit. Mr. Schroer from East Metro Strong said that this ignores a critical part of the transportation needs throughout the state. And then we heard from Mr. Timlin about how this impacts transit workers and transit riders. So we did have a very successful formula. Not only in 2006 when this initial constitutional amendment was passed, but in 2008 when we overrode Governor Pawlenty's veto of the transportation bill. It was a formula that included Greater Minnesota and the metro area. It was a formula that included business and labor interests, a very unified labor and business interest movement. We also had Greater Minnesota cities. We had a number of people that are opposing this amendment supporting that transportation effort in 2008. And it was because it helped people in all across the state. It helped people in all modes of transportation. That is sorely lacking from this effort. And I think that's why it has been so divisive. When I door knocked in my first election, there were two priorities that my constituents informed me of: education and transportation. And unfortunately, we're now dividing those priorities when we don't need to. So I hope that the committee will support the A3. I think it would go a long way in addressing some of the concerns that people have expressed. If we're going to do transportation, let's do it inclusively. Let's do it in a way that unifies us. Let's do it in a way that addresses the very significant transportation needs, both in road and bridge infrastructure, but in public transportation as well. I would ask the committee's support for the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hortstein. With that, we will proceed to the vote on the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The A3 fails. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. That is all the amendments we have before us. Seeing no one that would like to testify to the bill, I will make a few remarks and we'll proceed to vote. Members and guests, and I'd like to thank all of you that have come forward today with interest on this bill. It looks like Representative Rosenthal, would you like to make some remarks before we proceed?
Yes, thank you, Mr.
Sorry,
Chair.
I didn't mean to rush. I just have one eye on the clock. Representative Rosenthal.
I see the clock. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we all want jobs for our laborers and for the 49ers and for people who build our roads. We all want more for transportation, but this is not the way to do it. This is a coward's way out. We as legislators should do this statutorily and not put constitutional amendments on the ballot. You know, I think this one's going to go down like the others before it. And, you know, education is something that everybody cherishes. And I come from a district that is very well funded. Yet we're laying off teachers and paraprofessionals, and we have a deficit this year. And as Representative Mason said, we're still funding schools at 2003 levels. It's unacceptable. And to handcuff us like this seems to me really short-sighted and not the right way to go. So I would urge members to vote no.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank all of the testifiers, all of them. You know, it's very rare that on an issue that is as divided and polarized as this one that we heard today on the constitutional amendment, where I find myself agreeing with just about everybody who testified and most of their points. And that's because we've been on the same side in terms of the transportation advocates, many of the transportation advocates that spoke today. And unfortunately, we're not on the same side today because, as Representative Rosenthal and others have pointed out, we are not funding this in the way that I think is going to help all Minnesotans. We're doing it in a way that divides people. In my home district, we have significant education challenges, a big deficit, in part fueled by are in growing needs in special education, large class sizes. We've heard that this disproportionately will impact rural education. We have very, very significant health care needs that are impacted. And finally, Mr. Chair, again, we're only looking at one mode of transportation. I think that is going to set a very, very problematic precedent for the future. We're leaving so many people behind in this approach, and I would urge us to oppose this constitutional amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Just a few remarks before we proceed to the vote. First, the truth is everyone in this state is dependent on the transportation system, and there's broad agreement that it is short-funded. We've had a broad agreement from the administration and both parties that transportation comes up short. Without good roads and bridges, everyone from the baby in an incubator to the senior citizen in the nursing home is not being served well, because all those folks that bring goods and services to these various facilities depend on the transportation system to get these goods and services to work and to get themselves to work. I would argue transit is dependent on roads and bridges. After all, if you're going to drive a bus across the city or the state, you got to have a road to drive on. We are not ignoring transit. We are supporting transit by passing this bill. I'd like to thank everyone who's shown up today with their interest. Thank you for your remarks, Frank. You're right. We do have a sympathetic ear to all these testifiers, but this bill today is about dedicated funding for transportation. We know that transportation has been dependent on dedicated funding for many years. We know that that dedicated funding is falling short. To continue to try and increase the gas tax seems to be politically virtually impossible. At the same time, the experts tell us that the gas tax is not a good long-term viable solution because it's getting less and less dependable. So we've turned to what is seems to be a very reasonable approach to look at auto parts and repairs, sales taxes to try and fill this hole. And I think it's absolutely appropriate. Again, thank you all for being here. And we will proceed to the vote on House File 4437. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
The House File 4437, as amended, is passed and referred to taxes. Members, this is most likely our last meeting. I don't know that we have anything else that will come before us this biennium. I'd like to thank all of you, and I'm going to give Frank the microphone quick before I finish up.
Well, I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair. I mentioned this in Ways and Means, and I'll mention it again in our committee. You've been wonderful to work with and very inclusive of our members here and the minority. I really also want to thank our staffers, too. I mean, Jenny Nash is incredible, she's just been an incredible asset to all of us, I think, on both sides of the aisle. And Joe Marble is really tremendous. I've known a lot of staff people here on your side of the aisle, and Joe really stands out as someone who's really been inclusive. He's informed us. He's wonderful to work with, so I really want to especially thank Joe for his work and appreciate him very much. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I, too, first I'd like to thank all the members of the committee for your attendance and input into our work. I think you've all had a voice, and I appreciate everything you've done to try and make the work of this committee valuable to the citizens of Minnesota. Especially I'd like to thank Lead Hornstein for his work and cooperation, and also Vice Chair Petersburg for filling in when I've been unavailable. I'd like to thank our page, Joe Davey. I don't know where he went. There he is, Joe. Thank you, Joe. And I'll forgive you for knocking over the flag today. We need wider lanes back here. We'll add a third lane for a future meeting. I'd also like to, of course, thank our nonpartisan staff who have done a great job. Mr. Burris and Mr. Lee, thank you for your hard work. Really do appreciate your work and putting into print what we think of. I'd like to, of course, thank our partisan researchers. Ms. Nash has already been mentioned. This is my second biennium with her, even though it's my first biennium in transportation. She also does capital investment, so I'd like to thank her for her work in both committees. And, of course, Chelsea Axelson, who is off working right now on, I understand there's a minority report coming to the floor. So, and finally, my right-hand man, Sam Moyer, my CLA. Thank you, Sam, for your hard work. And, of course, Joe Marble, who I could not do this job without. So thank you, Joe. Thank you, Sam. And thank you, members. Thank you for everyone for the good hard work. And look forward to moving this bill forward. It sounds like we are headed for a rather large, what I like to call the blob. A lot of issues are coming together. I'm hoping I might have a seat on that conference committee, and I will defend your work to the best of my ability. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.